You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Aotearoa's uni students are spending over half their income on rent, are regularly not able to afford basic necessities, and skip class because transport to campus is too expensive. The People's Inquiry into Student Wellbeing was released on Monday and gave us a stark look at the dire conditions students are in while navigating their degrees. The Green Party is calling upon the government to lift student incomes and put rent controls in place to reverse a normalisation of student poverty in Aotearoa as we creep further and further into a cost of living crisis. I spoke to Chloe Swarbrick, the Green Party's tertiary education spokesperson, about the issue. Student poverty has kind of been sold as part of the student experience in New Zealand, you know, living in mouldy damp houses, eating 2-minute noodles for every meal. What does that tell us about how we're treating tertiary students in New Zealand?
Well, firstly, what our research has revealed is that despite this being a mythology that's been around for decades and decades, that things are far worse than we thought it was. So this individualised experience that a lot of people have had about, not being able to afford rent and taking on debt in order to buy essentials is in fact something that is experienced by two-thirds of students by virtue of the research announced in our inquiry. It's also the case that a large majority of students, 60%, are not getting access to any support from their family, that being whether their family is able to actually support them, let alone whether they are actually able to access that support in the first place. So I think first things first, it's really important for us to recognise that despite this being a long-standing mythology about how students are struggling by rite of passage, that things are far worse in real terms than they were even a decade ago. So then let's start to unpack this rubbish notion that students are supposed to be subjected to poverty because it's somehow character building or whatever else. Well, again, our data is showing us that a majority of students are not getting to campus or studying anywhere near as much as they would like because they are having to work on top of that study or they're not able to afford those basics, which in turn are detrimental to their studying outcomes. And I guess it comes to this broader question of what do we want to be as a country? Do we want to be a country that is actually investing in things like our education system and then in turn, obviously, in our healthcare system and our essential and emergency services and all of those other things which make us a productive and happy country?
A common reaction I've seen online to today's students complaining about the state of things is the whole, oh, big whoop, back in my day we had it so much worse, so stop complaining kind of thing. How do you respond to this?
Well, the data simply shows that it's completely untrue. I mean, we know that 50 years ago, university cost a nominal fee and nobody was taking out debt in order to pursue higher education. On top of that, we had bursaries which would pay people's living costs. And sure, while there are anecdotes about how people were taking summer jobs and otherwise, it's nothing on the data that shows us, as again, if you want a headline figure, it is that two-thirds of students in this country are regularly struggling to afford essentials. That is not a pathway out of poverty, which education is so regularly sold as, but is a perfect indication that poverty is a barrier to accessing and getting one's education in the first place. So first things first, it's a lie. It's totally untrue. Things are far worse than they were back in my day. And that said, back in my day and all of the ways that we used to do things also were not natural phenomena unto themselves. All of them are the consequences of political decisions that were made back then and are being made to this day. And different decisions can be made.
So many people have no choice but to take out huge student loans because of some of the barriers on being approved for a student allowance or just simply that the student allowance is no longer enough to live on in Auckland especially. What are you recommending as a remedy to this?
Yeah, so student allowance we know is only accessible to a very small minority of students and those who do end up getting access to the student allowance end up often getting on average less than half of what the student allowance is available on a weekly basis. Also what we know is that means testing fails at both ends of the spectrum. At the one end, the people who we would typically assume shouldn't get access to it, those who are wealthier tend to have financial arrangements by virtue of their parents having access to accountants and lawyers and all the rest, whereby their affairs can be put in a certain framework so that they are still able to access that allowance. On the other end of town, there are assumptions that are being made about the support that students who not in those relationships with their parents are able to access. So it's failing at both ends of the spectrum. On top of that, we know, and we actually have some pretty profound data here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, about how universalising certain types of benefits completely alleviates poverty for certain demographics. And when we want to talk about comparing the costs of certain things, well, I've got a figure, and that's that in 2021, the cost for just that year on superannuation, that is, of course, the closest thing that we have to a UBI in this country, cost $16.6 billion to administer for just that year. Student loan figures show us that currently the cost of debt against everyone who has ever taken out a student loan in this country and still has that debt is around $16 billion as well. So again, if people want to tell us that we can't afford these things, it's simply not true. It is a matter of the things that we are prioritising. And of course, typically, those who tend to hold power in our political circumstances.
Yeah, and a concerning part of the study that I read was that it said that a large majority of students were uncomfortable with raising issues with their landlord for fear of reprisal. How are landlords able to have this kind of chokehold on their tenants, and how can this be fixed?
Yeah, so it is really gnarly stat that around 70% of students are uncomfortable raising these issues with their landlords or with their property managers. And you'd only have to look at anecdotes raised on Facebook on the many of the different student groups about, for example, in Wellington, Quinnipiac, but there's a range of other stories that are out there. And of course, now we have this quantified in this inquiry. So the reason that we have this power imbalance between renters and landlords or property managers is because it's baked into the system. Again, that's not a natural phenomena. While we've made some moves to improve the situation with the likes of the Healthy Home Standards, my research and actually my parliamentary written questions and questions to the Minister in the House showcase that the government has absolutely no idea how many homes are currently living up to those Healthy Home Standards. On top of that, they have absolutely no idea how many property managers or landlords have self-verified that those homes cannot meet Healthy Home Standards. They have no idea how many companies are holding themselves out as capable of verifying these Healthy Home Standards, nor the quality that they are actually going to. So all of this shows us that effectively what we're working with is a voluntary system. So that's why the Greens have been advocating for, and once again, it's one of the recommendations as highlighted by virtue of those findings in the report that things, frankly, are not good enough, that we have a warrant of fitness for properties so that no property can be rented out in this country if it is going to make people sick. You know, even from a right-wing perspective, it is diabolical that you would end up renting out these properties which are going to cause far further harm to the likes of the economy because people are going to be having to have time off work and all the rest. And then on the flip side, we also need to have a register for property managers and landlords, which effectively is just accountability, an accountability mechanism, which again takes us back to that point that so frequently whenever I'm engaged in a debate or an argument around what we can do to improve the rental market, you'll often hear those who are landlords saying, hey, well, you know, this is our business. Well, businesses come with responsibilities. And right now, we think that it is absolutely unacceptable that you have to reach a far higher standard as somebody who is selling, I don't know, baked goods and engaged in that line of business than somebody who is providing the foundation for a decent life, that being a home.
And just finally, do you have confidence that the government will at least consider these recommendations that you've put forward?
Okay, if I can tell you one thing from my 5 years that I've been involved in this space in Parliament and obviously in the tertiary education portfolio, I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that the only way that any government and any politician will pay attention to anything is if you make it embarrassing and impossible for them not to. So while, of course, one of the core things that we wanted to do with this inquiry was to provide irrefutable evidence about what it is like to study and to be somebody engaged in the tertiary education system at this point in our history, data that the government refused to collect themselves, the second key component was to build a sense of solidarity, to remind everybody who's experiencing these things that it's not an individualised experience. It is systemic. Two-thirds of students regularly cannot afford the basics, and what that tells us is that we need system change. So with 400,000 odd students across Aotearoa New Zealand, and also actually some data that shows us that a majority of students are not engaged in their student association and therefore not aware of their collective power, that we have a hugely untapped potential for producing that change. And it means building that community and building that collective that can push for changing the status quo, which is completely not only unacceptable, but very obviously currently forcing people into poverty.
That was Green Party tertiary education spokesperson Chloe Swarbrick chatting with me about student poverty in Aotearoa.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.